Blog Talk Radio.
Jamo apura kanu apura kaitnut neye ojira da medinde ojirapo kwesi rad nehem pata akan akwamu mai amaruka tipi mu ojirapo. I mean, greetings to all Afurakani, Afurakani people, meaning black people, African people. Today is Ojira Da. My name is Ojirapo Kwesi Ra Nehempata Akan. Akwamu Mai Namaruka Tipimu Ojirapo, the Ojirapo of Akwamu Nation in North America. May I say for everyone tuning in, just want to put a few links up. If you can check out the Odomankuma article on our website, ojirapo.com. For those who are, the Odomankoma article is Odomankoma. If you just Google that, Odoman, Odoman, and Koma, Koma, Odomankoma, all one word, you will find the link to our article online. You can also go through the website, of course. The link is Odomankoma Atumukopa. That's one of the articles that we're going to deal with. Kukutuntun, the ancestral jurisdiction. You can also look at that. And for those who are in the chat room as well as those who are on the phone, if you have any questions, of course, in the chat room you must log in order to interact in the chat room. If you do not have a login username, you can create one very quickly. If you want to ask questions on the phone, just hit the number 1 to raise your hand, and then we can see that you're, you know, raising your hand, and we'll connect with you. Just a few announcements. And before that, just Ojira, of course, for those who are new to the program, Ojira means purification. That means purification in the Akan language. It also means Jira is directly derived from the term Jira in ancient Kanit and Kemet, Nubia, and Egypt. It also means purification. Ojira also means a celebration of purification. That's the name of the New Year celebration amongst millions of Akan people. The same is true in ancient Kemet. The term Jira as a verb means purification, but it also means a celebration of purification. So it's the exact same term from ancient times, and we continue to use the term in both ways as a form of purification to purify ritually. Jira, the noun version of Jira, means purification, and is also the name of our New Year celebration, which is a time of purification and regeneration. We call the show Ojira because we deal with Nana Som, which is our term for Afurakani, Afurakaini, or African ancestral religion. Nana Som or Afurakani, Afurakaini, ancestral religion, no matter what form it takes, whether it's Akan or Yoruba or Ebe or Vodun or Bakongo or Maasai or whatever traditional religious expression we engage in, even those of us who were forced into the Western Hemisphere during the Musu Okeke, the Great Perversity, the enslavement period, we continued to practice our ancestral religions, whether it was in Cuba, for example, in the form of Lukumi or Candomblé in Brazil, Vodun in Haiti, Obia in Jamaica, Hoodoo in the southern United States, Juju in the southern United States, Voodoo in the southern United States, southern eastern United States, and so forth. We continue to practice our tradition. So no matter what form or expression our ancient ancestral religious practices take, they're all fundamentally the same practices. We all attune to the Great Mother and Great Father, the Supreme Being, through the agency of the deity's ancestral spirit and ancestral spirits, the Abosom and Nananom and Samanfo, the Orisha and Egungun, the Vodou and Kuvita, and so forth. In essence, Afurakani, Afurakaini, or African ancestral religion, is the ritual incorporation of divine law and the ritual restoration of divine balance. So through ritual, we incorporate those things, objects, deeds, and entities we need to harmonize with divine order that's incorporating law, and through ritual, we restore balance to ourselves and our lives where imbalance has occurred. So through the expansive and contractive poles of divine order, which is Nyamewa, Nyame, and Sheshe, divine order. And Sheshe means order or arrangement. Nyame is the great father. Nyamewa is the great mother in our Akan tradition. That's Ame and Amenet in ancient Kemet. The two poles of order are divine law or love and divine hate. So you incorporate order through divine law. You reject disorder through divine hate. When you incorporate order and reject disorder, then you have a culture, and you're functioning in a specific manner. You include those things, objects, needs, or entities you need to harmonize and function in the world in an orderly fashion, and then you hate or you reject those things, objects, deeds, or entities that would otherwise create imbalance in your functioning in the world and cause you to malfunction. So those are the two poles of order. It's divine law or love and divine hate, Maranechi. We have, of course, our publication on that. Ojira, or purification, operationalizes Nanason. It is through purification on a consistent basis, purification of thoughts, intentions, and action that operationalizes our Apurakane, Apuraikani, ancestral African ancestral religious practice. Without purification on a consistent basis, thoughts, intentions, and action, purification physically and spiritually, non-physically, without that, you're not practicing ancestral religion. You're not doing anything. So Ojira operationalizes that practice. So this is the reason, the name, the basis of the name for the show. So a few announcements right quick. We have, if you look on our website, August 9th, which is not this Saturday, but next Saturday, we will be in Philadelphia at the Philadelphia Sankofa Festival. Excuse me, we're honored to have been invited to speak at the festival, keynote speech at the festival. The festival is an all-day festival from 12 p.m. to 6 p.m. There will be, you know, a number of different vendors, cultural expressions, a great deal of activity. It's a free event. So for people in Philadelphia and the surrounding regions, that would be a good place to connect, deal with people, connect on a cultural level with people. People who are involved in ancestral religious practices, involved in culture, people engaging in business and commerce, you know, with Apurakane, Apurakaitini-owned businesses, cultural expressions from the youth as well as adults, a number of different things, you know, food as well as clothing and various other vendors. So that's going to be a great event, August 9th in Philadelphia, 12 p.m. to 6 p.m., and we will have, in the midst of that time, we will be giving a presentation on Apurakane, Apurakaitini ancestral religion, culture, as it relates to Apurakane, Apurakaitini people in America and our relationship to Sankofa, as it relates to us specifically here in America, and the restoration of our culture directly from our direct blood ancestresses and ancestors. So we're going to get into that on August 9th. We also are in the midst of our fundraiser for our upcoming events in different cities. What we do in different cities when we come and teach, we do presentations. So, for example, we've gone to a number of different places over the past number of months. We've been in Philadelphia on more than one occasion. We've been to Baltimore, of course, in Maryland, D.C., Tennessee, Dallas, Texas. We've been to Houston. We've been to Virginia. We've been to North Carolina. We've been to a number of different places teaching Apurakane, Apurakaitini ancestral religion, culture, and nation building. Nanason, Amamre, Amaitesu. We deal with the information we have published in our publications. For those who are new to our website and to the show, we have about, right now we have 15 books. We also have about 60 plus research articles published We also have about 48 videos, most of them about 2 hours each, examining our publications, going into detail about our publications. We have, to date, 19 archived shows on Blog Talk Radio. We have the Ojida Show on Benada on Tuesdays. We have Egua Marketplace on Wednesdays on a weekly basis. All of those shows are archived. So all of our books and the public, other publications, of course, audio, all the written publications are free downloads from our website. The ebook version of our books are free downloads. But we also publish soft cover versions of 10 of our books to date. Those 10 books, they range between $8 and $11. So we print them in color on our own printers in-house. So we handle all of that in-house. We sell those publications, but the ebook versions of all of our books and, of course, all of our other publications are free on our website at ojidafo.com. We're in the midst of our fundraiser because when we go out and teach in different cities, we never charge for an admissions fee for people to attend our presentations, of course, and we do not charge a speaker's fee for people who organize the event. So the expenses we need to generate revenue to cover those expenses, and we also always give at least one free copy of one of our books, typically the book that we're speaking on that particular day. We try to give we've been able to give away a free copy of that particular book to everybody who comes, everybody who attends the event. So we want to keep that going. We have an event coming up in August 16th in Las Vegas. We're still raising funds to complete that, to confirm everything with that trip. So you can go to our website. You can order our publications. Again, they only range from $8 to $11. You can make a donation if you want to. Even if you make a donation of $15 or more, we're going to send you a book anyway. So the book of your choice, of course. So our website, ojidafo.com, O-D-W-I-R-A-F, as in free, o.com/nhoma.html. That is the Nhoma page on the website, N-H-O-M-A. Nhoma means books, publications. That's the publications page. You can go there and order. You can see our publications. You can also make a donation on that page. If you've already been downloading the PDF books, the e-books, and you feel like you need a soft cover version, but you just want to make a donation, you can make a donation on that page. But you can also make the purchases on that page as well. And also, the link, the video link, as well as the document link for Noquadefo distributor information is also on that page. We have a program whereby people who want to generate revenue by purchasing our soft cover publications wholesale, and then you can sell them retail. You know, as an entrepreneur, you wouldn't be working for us. You'd be working for yourself, of course. So purchasing our books wholesale, you can sell them retail wherever you are to your coworkers, friends, family, people in your area. You can generate revenue for yourself in that manner and also get the word out, accurate information. So that information is also on the Nhoma page. So that's the base. We're in the midst of our fundraiser. So if anybody who's, you know, if you value the work that you've studied from our website, the videos, the free books, the other publications, the 60-plus publications, the audio, the shows that we've had, the guests that we've had on, the information we've been sharing, and, you know, just the various free publications. If you can make a donation, Yerase, we thank you for that. Any donation, $15 or more, of course, you will receive a free book anyway. And, of course, if you would like to make a purchase of any of the books, whether it's just for individual use or if you want to distribute them in your area, we appreciate that, Yedase. We thank you as well. Okay, so for the people who just joined in the chat, you can look at the Odomankoma page, Odomankoma article on the website, as well as the Kukutuntun, the ancestral jurisdiction. And there was one more thing that I wanted to get to. Okay. And also for the people who just joined as well, on the phone line, if you want to make a question, or if you have a question and want to make a comment, just you would hit the number 1 to raise your hand, and we can deal with that. All right, so we want to get into these texts. We're talking about Aktem, the deity Diabolsum Aktem, Hafsatset, and Ma'at and Ma'at. If you, and there are different texts dealing with these divinities. You can look at, for example, the Nesmin papyrus, the so-called Book of Knowing, the Manifestations of Ra, or the Evolutions of Ra, and Overthrowing Apep. That's a later period papyrus. Of course, you can also look in the Meru, or the Pyramid Text, talking about Aktem, Hafsatset, Shu, and Tufnut, and so forth. And we're going to look at a couple of those texts. There's a great deal of misinformation revolving around these divinities. A couple of them, many people don't even know exist, Hafsatset or Hafsatset, and the male divinity Ma'at, who's the male counterpart of Ma'at. So many people speak of Ma'at, but they've never heard of Ma'at. He's an actual divinity. He's a force in nature that we invoke on a daily basis. He's included in libation. He's included in ritual prayer, just like any other Abosom or Orisha or Vodou. So again, as we spoke about last week, in order to understand the culture of ancient Kemet, as well as Kanit, ancient Egypt, ancient Nubia, and so forth, we must embrace ancestral religion. The culture, just like all across Apuraka, Apurakai, is rooted in religion. It's animated by religion. It is through our religious practices where we were able to and continue to be able to attune to the Great Mother, the Great Father, the Supreme Being, through the agency of the Abosom and Nananoman Samapho, which are the Akan terms for our deities and ancestral spirits. We attune to the Supreme Being through the agency of the deities and ancestral spirits, the Abosom and Samapho. Therefore, we are able to consciously harmonize ourselves, our thoughts, intentions, and actions with divine order. And when we're able to do that, then we can replicate that order when we're structuring society, structuring our activities, structuring relationships, learning about medicine, learning how to restore balance, structuring government, structuring everything. Religion animates culture. Nana Som animates Amamre, and that is the foundation for Amain Setsu, or nation building. If you don't understand and not actively engaged in the process of invoking the Abosom, the Orisha, the Vodou, and the Nananum Samantho, the Egungun, the Kubito, the deities and ancestral spirits, you will not understand cosmology as it's expressed in the culture of ancient Kemet or anything else. The culture of ancient Kemet, coming from the ancient culture of Kanit or Nubia, we migrated around the continent and we migrated to different parts of the world, some voluntary and some, of course, forced migration, which was the Musu Okethi or the enslavement era. But we carry the same culture, we carry the same language, we carry the same ritual practices, we worship the same divinities that we worshiped in ancient Kemet. We continue to worship them today by the same names. They have the same functions in creation, operate through the same features in creation, and are still connected to us by blood. They still possess us during ritual today. They still speak through divination today. All of these ancient divinities we talk about and read about on the walls, they still possess our people today. We still communicate with them, no matter where we are on the continent or in the world. They're connected to us by blood. The only way you can understand the culture and cosmology is if you're invested in the culture. Through evocation and invocation, then you can understand the functioning of these divinities. Otherwise, we're just reading things, repeating what we've read from the whites and their offspring. We're just investigative reporters. We're just reporting on things that somebody else said. At best, we may learn some basic principles of learning how to translate the Medutu, translate the so-called hieroglyphics, learn something about the language compared to the languages of ancient, of Hafuraka, Hafuraikai. Today we will learn, of course, that the languages are the same, the words are the same, the names and deities and place names and various things are the same, so we can see a linguistic connection. Of course, if we study DNA, we know there's a direct genetic connection from the people of ancient Kemet to West Hafuraka, Hafuraikai, Central, South, and into North, Central, and South America and the Caribbean, where we are right now. We have the same DNA. So we can see a linguistic link, genetic link, cultural link, and so forth, and we can be good investigative reporters when we just study that kind of information. But when it comes to interpreting the data and how it relates to us spiritually and culturally and how to engage our life based on divine order, if we're not engaged with the abosom, the divinities, the forces in nature that are on the walls, their expressions are on the walls and in the papyri and in the sculptures and so forth, if we don't invoke them directly, we have no knowledge of them. So no white Egyptologist or white linguist or white pseudo-spiritist or occultist or hermeticist or Sufi or Kabbalist or any kind of nonsensical individual, white or their black followers, can teach you anything about ancient Kemet in reality when you're talking about connecting with the actual divinities that animated and continue to animate the culture. They can't teach you that because they can't engage that. They can't deal, they can't communicate with the forces of nature. Only Afurakani, Afurakani people can do that. We are the only people created, of course. We're the only people with a Kra, a Ka, and Ka, a soul, a divine consciousness. The whites and their offspring don't have that force in nature dwelling within them, so therefore they have no connection to the forces in nature. So they cannot communicate with them. They are repelled by them, repelled from them. We are in harmony with them. We are drawn to the forces in nature. They are repelled or repulsed by the forces in nature, so they cannot communicate. Therefore, they cannot teach us anything about who they really are. The best thing they can do is repeat what some of our people said about them thousands of years ago and repeat that information. But, of course, they always interpret it in a perverse fashion, deliberately. We can't continue to operate in that same fashion. So when we get to, for example, creation and talking about the cosmology of creation, when you have a proper perspective, you can decipher and understand what's going on in the text of ancient Kemet. If you don't embrace the culture, you're not actively involved in akom or unkom, spirit possession, spiritual communication, ritual practice, dealing with these actual divinities, you can't ask them about their role in creation. If you're not engaged in that process, then the interpretations become corrupt. So, for example, you hear people talk about there were four different cosmologies of creation in ancient Kemet. They'll talk about the Memphite theology or the theology of Anu or Heliopolitan or the Hermopolitan and the Theban and so forth and say these were competing cosmologies. And many people will say that. Of course, that's totally inaccurate. There was no such thing as a competing cosmology. All of these different aspects of our culture were referencing specific things. So talking about the eight primordial deities or abosom in Kemenu, which they call Hermopolis, Amen and Amenet, Ka and Kaet, Hehu and Hehud and Nu and Nut, that's talking about the primordial divinity, which would later give birth to what they talk about in with regard to the so-called Memphite theology or what was found on the Shabaka stone talking about Ptah and him fashioning the world, which later, of course, is directly tied to the so-called cosmology of Anu or Heliopolis when we talk about Atem and Usaset, Shu, Tefnu, Seb, Nut, Asar, Aset, Set, and Nebethet, and so forth. And, of course, the so-called Theban dealing with Amen, Amenet, and going into more detail about who they are and how they even gave birth to the original so-called Agdawa, but gave birth to Ka and Kaed, or Keku and Kekut, Heku and Hehut, and Nun and Nunet, and so forth, and established that whole piece. So we talked about the primordial eight divinities last week. We also, previous to that, we talked about the 42 enunciations of Ma'at. And we talked about Ma'an, Ma'at to a certain extent. Today we're going to get into talking about Atem and Usaset. They often referred to this as the cosmology of Anu or Heliopolis, only because Atem was, you know, centered, that shrine was centered in that particular region. But of course, Atem is a primordial ancient divinity, and so is Usaset. And she's very important and key to all of this. One of the reasons why things are misinterpreted, again, we said because our people are not engaged in ancestral religion. We've been tricked by the white Nile Spring to think that religion is a criminal word, is evil. Our people weren't religious. Some people engage certain kinds of terminology that they've learned from the white Nile Spring, foolishness like we're spiritual beings having a human experience, or we're gods having a human experience. All that kind of nonsense comes directly from the writings and the false teachings of the white Nile Spring. We did not come up with these little lines. We heard them from the white Nile Spring, and we repeat them. Like slaves repeating what the master said, we repeat this nonsense. We're always trying to get away from reality. The white Nile Spring taught us falsely that monotheism is superior and polytheism is inferior and primitive. So foolishly, we embrace that nonsense, and we're scared to say that the reality is that, of course, there's more than one God. The idea of monotheism comes from the inferior mind of the Caucasian. No intelligent, even child in Afuraka would be foolish enough to believe that there's just one God. That's stupidity. That's ignorance. We know who the great God and the great goddess are because we deal directly with them. It's not a belief system. We know who the various abosom, the various deities are, the orisha are, because they possess us, communicate with us, and we communicate with them. The whites and the offspring have no capacity to do that, and because they don't have that capacity, they don't want us to tap into our capacity to do so. They want us to stop that. They want us to shortchange that, so they promote the false notion of monotheism. Many of our so-called Afrocentric or cultural individuals still hang on to monotheism. They want to prove that our culture was monotheism and is just as good as the white culture, which is foolish. Some of them have moved into pseudo-metaphysics and occult sciences, pseudosciences, and so forth, as though white people preserved our culture in ancient Europe or in medieval Europe during the Renaissance, Victorian eras, and so forth. They were hiding the culture and keeping it under wraps until it was time for us, like a prophecy, to come back and regain the culture. And all of this nonsense, all coming from the Bible and the Quran, and that whole mindset that at one day the saviors will come and give us our stuff back and we will become the saviors ourselves, all that foolishness, that's crazy. No white people were preserving any ancient sciences, period, at all. We continue to practice our ancestral religion. When you don't understand the culture, you can fall into a foolish belief that white people preserved ancient sciences in Europe. That is totally inaccurate. We didn't stop practicing ancestral religion when we left Kemet. We continue. This is why the Akan people, Yoruba people, Ebe people, and everybody else, when they get possessed by these same divinities today, they're still dealing with the same deities. They're still speaking the same language. They're still using the same ritual cultures, colors, and practices, and so forth. So when we get to the actual divinities, we can ask them about the creative process. We can learn directly who they are. When some of our people are reading these texts, and they've studied the language of ancient Kemet and other languages and linguistics and cosmology, some of them have got caught up in the foolishness of atheism, thinking, trying to promote that as part of our culture, which is nonsense, of course. That's just another white pseudo-religion. They start trying to reinterpret texts that they get embarrassed by. This is why we're going to deal with the reality of who Atem is and who Usaset is. You read a text talking about Atem, and the whites and their offspring always attempt to insert sexual deviance into our culture. Now, we have smashed the lies regarding dissexuality being accepted in ancient Kemet. We've shown that dissexuality or homosexuality was never accepted in ancient Kemet. That one of the three new books that we just released over a week ago, the book Kokobo, which is includes four of our research articles all compiled in one volume, where we prove that dissexuality, homosexuality, was never accepted in ancient Kemet. One section of that book deals with the piece on Set and Anat, the dating of the contendings of Heru and Set. Dissexuality, homosexuality, was never accepted in Kemet. We proved in that text that when the whites and their offspring showed up in ancient Kemet, then that's when one reference to dissexuality shows up in ancient Kemet. You won't find any reference anywhere else for thousands of years except in that one text. It also happens, of course, that in the same text is dated because the whites and their offspring show up in that text. Foreign goddesses, Anat and Astarte, show up in the text as daughters of Ra. The reason why that's significant, again, because if the foreign goddesses, which they are, have been incorporated in the cosmology to the extent that they are recognized as daughters of Ra in that particular text, that means the foreigners have become so entrenched at that point that by the time that text was written, the foreign goddesses were already woven into the fabric of the cosmology. That's also why a reference to dissexuality, an apparent reference to dissexuality, was woven into the text as well. But then we show that when the whites and their offspring show up, an apparent reference to dissexuality shows up. But then we go further to prove that the original story didn't have anything to do with dissexuality anyway. It was actually a story about a male and a female divinity. The whites and their offspring later took the female divinity out, the sea goddess, and replaced it with Heru. So we proved that, and we showed the original story and the modified perverted story. And we show the true story, and we show the politics and everything behind that. The same thing happens here with respect to Atem. Now we talk, and we did the same thing, of course, with the text dealing with Ptah Hetep, talking about the prepubescent sexual taboo. It's talking about a taboo against engaging in sexual intercourse with a young woman who has not yet gone through her rites of passage to become a woman. We go into detail to prove that and properly translate that instruction of Ptah Hetep, which the whites and their offspring have unsuccessfully but consistently attempted to make a homosexual reference. So we've smashed all those arguments with dissexuality very easily. Now you have some Negroes and following the whites and their offspring who are trying to say that we engage in sexual deviance in another fashion, and they associate that with the deity Atem. There's one particular papyrus, the papyrus of Henut Tawi, the chantress of Amen. This is a title of a priestess going back about 3,000 years. It's an anomaly because in the text, in the papyrus, what you will see, the normal representation of Geb and Nut. Geb is the father earth divinity dealing with the crust of earth. Nut is the sky divinity. She is bent over Geb, so you'll very often see Geb laying on the ground, of course, representing the crust of earth. And then you'll see Nut bending over him, and she has the stars in her body. She is the Nut sky, or the night sky. And at night, it appears that the night sky is hugging or bent over the earth. So then they show the night sky goddess, the female divinity, bent over the earth deity, the male deity, in an arch. Her body is arched, and they draw stars all throughout her body. So that's a representation, the union of earth and sky, Geb and Nut, the father and mother of Asar, Aset, Set, and Nebehet. That representation you find throughout ancient Kemet for thousands and thousands and thousands of years, the same representation over and over and over again. In the papyrus of Henut Tawi, you find that same representation. However, right behind that representation you have another representation of Geb laying on the ground, but then bent over him is a deity with the stars in the body, but instead of the stars in the body of a deity of Nut, it's a male divinity with an erect phallus, and then Geb is bent over laying on the ground, and it looks like his phallus is touching his mouth. This is an anomaly, because it's never been represented that way. So our people, instead of understanding what's going on, and they listen to the whites and their offspring, the whites and their offspring say, oh, well, this represents, you know, the male engaging in self-stimulation, auto-fellatio, masturbation to create the world, and some of our people are foolish enough to embrace that false definition, and then they start trying to engage in all kinds of philosophical machinations to explain it away, just like they did with the text of Ptah Hetep. The whites and offspring said it had to do with homosexuality, so our people started trying to explain it away because they were embarrassed that because they believed what the whites and offspring said. We were able to translate, give the actual meaning of the text to prove it had absolutely nothing to do with homosexuality. It was talking about a prepubescent female, as it says right there in the text, as opposed to what the whites and offspring attempted to translate as an effeminate man. The same thing here. The whites and offspring try to say this has to do with masturbation and the creation of the world through masturbation and all kinds of nonsense. And they use this particular papyrus to prove that. Of course, this papyrus is no different than the so-called Chester Beatty papyrus when we talked about the Set and Anat and the contendings of Heru and Set. Just like during that period, the whites and their offspring had invaded, if you look at the period of the specific papyrus of Henut Tawi, it shows up during the third intermediate period in the true story of Kemet. So you have these three intermediate periods. You have a period of stability, 4,000 years or more, then a couple of thousand years, and then you have an intermediate period. That's when there's chaos in the society, a breakdown of the societal structure. Foreigners invade and take over and corrupt the culture. Then after the intermediate period, you have another period of stability where people run the foreigners out. For example, during one of the intermediate periods, the Hekushasu, or the so-called Hyksos, invaded. The foreigners invaded, took over ancient Kemet. They were ruling for a while, a few hundred years. Then the people in the 17th and then so-called 18th dynasty running the Hyksos out, that's the end of that intermediate period, and then you have the new kingdom, and you have a great period of expansion and development and so forth that lasts for, you know, centuries. Then all of a sudden, again, centuries later, there's a breakdown in society, and there's another intermediate period. The intermediate period, called the third intermediate period, is the time frame when this particular papyrus of Henut Tawi shows up with this anomalous representation. You have the normal representation of Geb and Nut right there on the papyrus, just like all the other papyri, all for thousands of years, as well as relief carvings and everything else. Then you have this anomalous representation. Geb self-stimulating himself up under what should be the goddess Nut, but now it's the representation of a male divinity bent over in the sky with the stars in his belly. You won't find that anywhere else in Kemet. This third intermediate period, this is a time when invasions had taken place. There was control by people who were dominated by the whites and their offspring. And when the whites and their offspring show up, corruption and dissexuality and deviance shows up. So you have the first instance, we prove that very easily. You can read that text. And tonight we're going to go into this in detail as well. So that representation can be tied directly back to the corruption of the interpretation of who Atem is, because they try to say because this Geb is bent over and apparently swallowing his own seminal fluid, they try to tie that to Atem. Now, of course, this is a corruption produced by the whites and their offspring when the society had degenerated. We're going to show the original cosmology dealing with Atem to prove that he was never engaged in sexual deviance in the first place. Some of our people look at this particular papyrus, don't realize it's an anomaly, they try to explain it away. They'll try to say something nonsensical like, well, unless you understand, you know, the sacred symbolism and it's only preserved for priests and priestesses, then you won't understand this culture, but this is a sacred symbol. It's not a sacred symbol. It's a corruption of our culture. It has nothing to do with us at all. The same thing is true of Atem. So when they talk about the deity Atem in the cosmology, the aspects of the cosmology in Anu and just across the board dealing with Atem in the coffin text, pyramid text, and so forth, the whites in the Arab Spring read the text showing that Atem comes to Anu. They say that they attempt to interpret the text that he masturbated and produced his children, Shu and Tefnut, and then Shu and Tefnut give birth to Geb and Nut, the earth and sky, and Geb and Nut give birth to Asar, Aset, Set, and Nebethet. So they want to say that Atem masturbated to create those first two deities. That's their interpretation. The whites and their offspring know that interpretation is false, but they promote it anyway. Then our people read the text written by the whites and their offspring. They study the Medutu and take the same interpretations that the whites and their offspring give. Now they're in a quandary because they can't explain it. Now they're embarrassed because they don't want to promote this sexuality, but it looks like the text is promoting it because they're listening to the whites and their offspring. So then they can't hide the text. So they try to say, well, yeah, it looks like it's promoting that, but it's really a sacred symbolism. In reality, it's not. Then some faggots and dykes start talking about, well, actually, you know, masturbation is a sacred thing. It's only for the mature and the spiritually grounded. And that's nonsense. Masturbation is sexual deviance. It's perverse. It's spiritual disorder. So anybody engaged in that, we didn't get that from our culture. That comes from the whites and offspring. All sexual deviance as a culture comes from the whites and offspring. We've never engaged in that. So let's get into the text. First, we're going to look at the book of knowing the manifestations of Ra and of overthrowing Apep. And we're going to get into it very quickly. Just as a background, when we talked about the Agdawad, we talk about Amen, Amenet, the great father and the great mother. They created Ha and Kayat, the divine black substance of space, a male and female divinity, the expansive and contractive force within that great black divine substance, which is dark energy, dark matter. The 99% of all the universe is that dark energy and dark matter, which we call Ka and Kayat, the divine consciousness of Amen and Amenet. They direct Ka and Kayat to create. Hehu and Hehut are the expansive and contractive force of vitality that operates within that black substance. And Nun and Nunet is the energetic substratum within that black substance. When Nun and Nunet start to move and vibrate within that black substance becomes fluid. Then it produces black spheres, from which bursts forth Ra and Riot, the first light in the creation in the universe. That light splits through the black substance, carves out black spheres, which became stars. Those stars eventually gave birth to solar systems, which, of course, is one of ours, is one of them. The solar system developed, our planet developed from, you know, within the solar system. That was another black sphere that was developed. Ra and Ra's energy penetrates the primordial earth and causes separation and development within that. We went into all of that last week and into the various articles we have in the Odomakoma article, as a matter of fact. I wanted to go through that very quickly, but eventually you have the primordial earth, and then you have the fire at the core of earth, and the iron at the core of earth is where Ptah and Sechima Sekhmet dwell. Ptah is called the fashion of earth. His workshop is in the core of earth where the iron is. Sechima, the fiery divinity, the wife of Ptah, and of course he's her husband, they're fashioning at the core, the inner core of earth. On top of the inner core is an outer liquid core. On top of that is the lower mantle. On top of that is the upper mantle. On top of that is the crust. So when you're dealing with that, you're talking about Ptah, at the very center and Sechima at the very center. Then you're dealing with regard to the mantle and so forth. You have Atem and Asaset, Nebedetepet. Then you have, that's the mantle. Then lower mantle, upper mantle, you have Shu and Tefnut there. And then the crust, you have Geb, and then, of course, Nut. So you have these various layers of earth and these various divinities that animate these regions, the spiritual forces that animate that fiery energy at the core, that animate the viscous aspect, which we deal with, we're talking about the lower mantle and the upper mantle, the spiritual forces that animate the crust. And then, of course, Geb and Nut, earth and sky, give birth to Asar, Aset, Set, and Nebethet. Asar operating through the black soil substance of earth, Set operating through the red earth, which is the deserts as well as the red clay, Aset operating through the rivers of earth, Nebethet operating through the rain, waters, and dew of earth, and so forth. So you see these, earth and sky gives birth to these four divinities, and Asar and Aset give birth to Heru, Set and Nebethet give birth to Anpu, and so forth, and the various divinities come from them. So you have these various layers. When you look at the cosmology found on the Shabaka stone, you have Ptah, who's the fashioner, after he's created by Ra and Ra'et. He's at the center of earth, and they talk about Ptah fashioning the earth. He establishes the primordial hillock, and they say Atem sits upon the primordial hill. Now, this is no different than inside of the earth. Ptah is at the innermost core, and on top of the core of earth is the next level, which is the mantle, the lower mantle that sits upon the earth. That is the domain of Atem and Asaset Nebedetepet, Asaset Nebepet, who we're going to get into. That's on in the inner earth. On the outer earth, on the surface, you have that primordial hillock fashioned by Ptah, the great Ka and Kaet, the raised land that rose up out of the from under the surface of the water to become the first landmass of earth, later to be called Afuraka, Afuraikaet, or Africa. But that first Ka, or raised land that rose up from the ocean, that's fashioned, shaped by the fashioner divinity, which is Ptah. Ptah and Sekhmet together are fashioning this landmass. And then they say, Atem sits upon that primordial hill. And when he sits upon the primordial hill, he creates Shu and Tefnut, expansion and contraction, fire and water, and then they give birth to Geb and Nut, the earth surface and the sky and so forth, and then it goes on and on. When you look at Atem, you will find that Atem is in the setting sun. In the red sun, you'll see Atem sitting inside of the red sun. So when the sun sets on the horizon, sometimes it looks like a red disc sitting, setting in the western horizon. Just like in the east, very often the sun looks like a yellow disc rising. You'll see Kepra inside of the yellow disc, the explosive power of the rising sun. Then you have the setting sun, which is the consuming power of fire. The explosive power of fire is Kepra as well as Kepri. The consuming power of fire when the red sun is setting in the evening is dealing with Atem. So you will see Atem literally sitting inside of the red sun. When the sun sits or sets in the western horizon, that is akin to a seed being planted in the ground. But it's also the red sun of Atem setting on the mountain range. So when they talk about Atem, after the land is raised up, and then Atem sits on the primordial hill, literally that happens every time there's a sunset. The very first sunset in the true tree of creation, the sun sets on the primordial hill. Atem is literally setting on the hill. Not only visually seeing the sun apparently touching, but the solar energy penetrating and enlivening the landmass and giving it power, giving it vibrancy. If you look in our article, Odomankoma Atemukopa, we give the definitions of the name Atem, the root Tem. Tem means to complete. It means all, complete, whole, entirely full. It also means to compress, to squeeze together to join. Tim. Tim also means to make an end of or to finish. Temu also means a hard, compact substance. What is the connection between those things? To complete. When the sun sets, that's the completion of the day. When Atem sets and touches the ground in the red sun, when the red sun's energy penetrates the earth, that's the completion of the day. That's the end of a cycle. That's why Temu means all or complete, whole, entirely, or full. Tem also means to compress or squeeze together, to join, to make an end of. And then it also means hard, compact substance. Once that primordial earth had rose up in the form of a hill, when that the sun set and that energy went into the primordial earth, then it hardened the earth and made a substance for the first time. Of course, you can have, if you look at videos of the creation of an island, what you'll find is, and you can Google that, you'll see water, and then you'll see explosions, volcanic eruptions jumping right up out of the water, and then you'll see the emergence of lava. And it'll explode, and it'll keep exploding, and then an island will emerge from the water. And as that lava is hardening, then it's the manufacturing of a brand new island. First, it's lava, but then it begins to harden and become compact, squeezed together, joined, make an end of, finish. This is Atem. That first raised land like a volcano, the land rising up above the water, it's hot, it's fiery, it's viscous, it's lava-like, but then it begins to harden. It becomes complete. It becomes whole, Temu. It becomes compressed or squeezed together, Temu. It becomes made an end of or finished. It's a finished product, Temu. It becomes a hard, compact substance, Temu. And now the animals, of course, can live on this new hard substance, this new landmass. So this is the reason why Atem has that title. So when they say Atem sets upon earth, it's the sun setting. He's inside the red sun. It sets upon the primordial earth, and then it hardens it or makes it a complete substance that other entities can now live upon. Then they say that he creates Shu and Tefnut. Now, in the pyramid text, it talks about this, and in the Book of Knowing the Manifestations of Ra, it talks about that. So let's read from the Book of Knowing the Manifestations of Ra and see where the crackers, the whites and their offspring, the Achiwadiefo, the spirits of disorder, have misrepresented our culture. So we can read directly from that. There are two versions, versions A and version B, and they basically say exactly the same thing. Slight variations, but really the same thing, and especially the part we're talking about. We're talking about the Book of Knowing, Manifestations of Ra, the history of creation, of the creation of the world. You can find this in Budge's book. You can find it in a number of different places. It's the Nesi Men Papyrus, and it's the Bremner Rend Papyrus as well. You'll more easily find it as the Bremner Rend Papyrus. Bremner is Bremner-Rhind, and you can download it that way. It's in the British Museum. Okay, so when it's talking about Book of Knowing the Evolutions of Ra and of Overthrowing Apep, the word of Neb-Er-Jer, he spoke after he came into being. And by the way, Neb-Er-Jer is just a title meaning the Neb, the master of Jer, the limits, or the ends of things, the complete thing. That's why Atem, again, is the complete one. All complete, whole, entirely full, the end of things, to make an end of, to finish. Neb-Er-Jer is the master or lord of the limits of the world. He fashions that. He governs that. The setting of the sun is the limit of the world and so forth. So it talks about the Neb-Er-Jer when he spoke, when he came into being. It says, I am he who came into being in the form of Khepra. He's the creator of what came into being before earth existed, before the heavens existed, all these different things. He talks about, he kind of repeats a number of different things. So after Ra and Ra'et create the world, then eventually they give birth to Atem, and then he comes to finish the creation. He's the finisher. Now, the important part as we get here, it says, I was alone. I had not spit out Shu. I had not spit out Tef Newt, his two children. Not existed another who worked with me. Talking about he was by himself at this point on the landmass. He made a foundation with his own heart. There came into being a multitude of beings which came into being from out of various births. He goes into that. And then the key piece here, it says, Anupu ha'a kefa'a dada na kahabit or kahaba'a, which says, they translate, I had union with my clenched hand. I joined myself in an embrace with my kahibit or my shadow. I poured seed into my mouth, my own. I sent forth issue in the form of Shu. I spit out Tef Newt. So he's saying he had union with his clenched hand. Right after that, he says, I joined myself in an embrace with my shadow, meaning the kahibit, which is a spiritual form. He poured seed into his own mouth, and he spit out Shu, and he spit out Tef Newt. That's one particular one, creation version A, and then version B, it basically says the same thing. We can get to that real quick. Okay, and it says just that exact same place. He says, after I had union with my clenched hand, kepa'a came to me, my heart, out of my hand. The seed which fell from my mouth, I spit out Shu and spit out Tef Newt. Now, let's deal with, first, I had union with my clenched hand. The key is the actual name, the actual title. Had union, that's accurate. When it says, with my clenched hand, my is ah, and then clenched hand is kapha, K-H, the symbol for the K-H sound, the symbol, the horn viper for the F sound, and the symbol for the A sound, kepha, and then the determinative medut of a hand grasping something. So kepha means to grasp. It means the hand. What's very interesting also is kepha is the name of a female divinity. So, this is very interesting because Atem, the one who sits in the red sun, when he sets on the primordial earth, and Temu again means hard compact substance, he's the first male divinity to be on earth. He operates through the red sun. What you have is Atem, the red one, operating through the red sun, and the first male red one on earth, that's Adam, or in so-called Hebrew, Dem, which means earth. It also means the red one, the first male on earth. This is where they get Adam from. This comes from Atem, operating through the red sun, the first male on earth. Now, when they talk about Kepha, he had union with his clenched hand. The whites and their offspring will try to say, well, that's talking about masturbation. They always try to inject sexual deviance into the culture. The goddess Usaset Nebet Hetepet is the wife of Atem. We have images of her sitting next to Atem in the article and on the website. She's the grandmother of the divinity. The determinative medut of Hetepet. Hetepet means offering. It means peace. It also means offering. The medut is also the symbol of the vulva. She is called the hand of the god. Why is Asaset Nebuchadnezzar called the hand of the god? This is his wife. She is the mother of Shu and Tef Newt, as attested in the pyramid text, the Meru text, and across ancient Kemet. When he says in the late period text that was written in about 2,300 years ago, by the time the Greeks had begun to invade and so forth, he had union with his clenched hand. The term clenched hand is kepha. Kepha is the name of a female divinity. That's the clenched hand. That's the title of Asaset Nebuchadnezzar. She's called the hand of the god. Just like we say today, my wife is my right hand. I'm dependent on my wife. She's my right hand. We say that now because we've been saying that for thousands of years. But even more specifically, cosmologically, Atasset Nebetetepet, because her medut, the symbol, is the vulva itself, or the vagina, is considered a hand because it grasps. That's why Kepha in Kemet means to grasp. And when it says he had union with his hand, his right hand, talking about Atasset Nebetetepet, the mother of Shu and Tefnu, when he had union with his clenched hand, and it says he embraced his kahibit, or kahabat, as a wife and gave birth to Shu and Tefnut. It wasn't talking about he was clenching himself and masturbating. He was clenching the hand of the god. That is the title of the goddess, Atasset Nebetetepet, the hand of the god. She's his right hand, but also the vagina is a hand that's grasped. We recognize by using that kind of terminology that the female is not a passive participant in the procreative process. She's not just an empty vessel who just is just there, and the male has all the life and comes and fills her up with his seed. That is not the case. It's the same is not the case with the ovum. The ovum is not just a dead cell waiting for the living sperm to come and penetrate it and give it life. The ovum is an active participant in the procreative process. The female is just as active as the male. The ovum is magnetic. It magnetically draws the sperm cell to it, so it's actively pulling the sperm cell to it. The female actively pulls, draws the male to her. She's a magnet. She arouses the male. She draws the male magnetically to her. Just a male seeing a female on the street and magnetically drawn. That's a pull, just like a magnet pulling another magnet across the table. That's an actual force. She's an active participant in the process. Even when the male and female unite, husband and wife unite, and they copulate, the female organ is a magnet for the male organ. And even when they actually copulate, the female organ grasps Kepha, the male organ, and literally pulls the seed out of the male. And once it pulls the seed out of the male, then the seed goes into the female, but then the ovum does just like the female organ. It pulls the sperm towards it through magnetic attraction. So on every level, just physically seeing the female, she's a magnet for the male. The female reproductive organs and the male reproductive organs, the female reproductive organs is a magnet for the male. When they actually copulate and unite physically, the female organ grasps and pulls the seed out of the male. When the seed comes from the male and gets and starts going through the female reproductive apparatus, then the ovum is a magnet that pulls the sperm cell to it. So on every level, the female is a magnet. She grasps. So this is why Atasset, the great goddess, the great grandmother of these divinities, is called the hand of the god. That's just a praise name for her. So when they say Atem united with his Kepha, with his right hand, with his hand, he's talking about literally Atasset, Nebetetepet, who literally has the vulva as a part of the spelling of her name. Now, what's very interesting, we just said that Atem is where they get Adem or Adam from. Dem, the root in Hebrew meaning red and ruddy, but it also means earth, Adam and Adama and so forth. And, of course, the red sun and so forth, and the compact substance, Temu, meaning the compact earth, and the first male on earth. Well, the title for Eve, English, in so-called Hebrew, the way it's spelled is Kava, K-H-A-V-A-H. That's the way it's spelled. Of course, the A's aren't there per se. They have the consonantal structure, but they pronounce it Kava. And then in English, it becomes E, but it's Kava. And then the Hurrian goddess from which they got that is Kaba or Keba. So Keba and Kaba is the same name. If you look in amongst the El and Asheratum, in the ancient so-called Northwest Semitic cultures and so forth, you'll find that one of her titles is Kawa. Kawa, Kava, Kaba is all the same thing, all the same title. This is why that comes directly from ancient Kemet, which is Kafa, meaning the hand of Aten, meaning the great goddess who is his hand or his quote-unquote right hand, called Kafa. And this is why the goddess, the serpent goddess shown as a serpent, is Kaba in ancient Kemet. This is why Keba and Kaba in so-called Hebrew and other so-called Semitic languages are also represented. One of the definitions is that of a serpent. Where does that come from? It comes directly from ancient Kemet. When you look at Kaba as the serpent goddess, you'll see the symbol of the cobra representing the female divinity. Just like you have Atem or Adem and Kaba in so-called Hebrew in the Bible, later Adam and Eve, it comes directly a corruption from Atem and Kafa. Now, if you look at the text again, it says, Anukpu Hata Nkefa'a, I had union with my Kefa. Then it says, I joined myself in an embrace with my Kaba, which is the Kahavit. The Kaba is, on one hand, it's the shadow. On the other hand, it's the shade. It's your aura, that spiritual auric egg that surrounds your body. He says he took the Kaba as a wife. He had union with his hand, meaning Afaset Nebetetepet, and took her spirit, Kaba, as a wife. He was calling her his other half, basically, his spirit, his Kaba. Kabat or Kahaibat in Kemet is where you get Keba, the great goddess, wife of El, in the so-called Semitic languages and so forth, and Kaba in Eve. So you have the Kafa, which is the hand, the title of Nebetetepet, the great goddess, and then Kabat or Kahaibat, which is the aura, which is her form, which is where they get Keba from in Hurrian and other so-called Semitic languages. The same names of the same goddess, where they get their goddesses from, they got it directly from Kemet. It's talking about an actual divinity. Asaset Nebetetepet is also called Asaset Het-Heru Nebetetepet. She's given the title Het-Heru because Het-Heru is a divinity of reproduction, fertility, sensuality, and so forth, creativity, and all of that. Because Asaset Nebetetepet is connected to that function, then she's given that title as well. Just like you can name your children after you, you can give them one of your names. They're different from you. They're a different ancestral spirit than you. But we'll give them a specific name if they carry a certain characteristic that's been passed down through our blood circle. So if people were like warrior types in our blood circle and your child has that same kind of energy, you give them their own specific name, but then you give them one of your names as well. That does not mean that they are you. You are two separate individuals, but they're named after you because they continue to carry that particular quality that's been passed down from generation to generation, originally coming from an Abosom. The same thing happens with the divinities of ancient Kemet. You'll find that deities sometimes have praise names, which are the names of different deities. For example, like Mentu, the warrior divinity, he's sometimes called Mentu Ra. It's not because he is Ra, it's because he carries some of the energy of Ra, so he can be called Mentu Ra. That's a praise name or a nickname for him. You can have Shamsu. He's also called Shamsu Ra. You can have a number of different divinities. You have Osar, when he's connected to Ra and carries some of that energy of Ra, he can be called Osar Ra. It's the same thing with Asaset Nebetetepet, Het-Heru Nebetetepet. Sometimes they'll place Het-Heru in there to show what kind of energy does she have. Why does Nebetetepet have the vulva? Het-Heru governs the vulva. So since Nebetetepet has that symbol connected to her name showing that she operates through that energy, then she can be called Het-Heru Nebetetepet. That is very important because the same deity exists in Akan culture. Our article, Odomankoma, Atumukopa, is showing that the deity Odomankoma in Akan is actually Atumukopa or Atem Kepra in ancient Kemet. So we prove that in the article. One of the wives or the counterparts of Odomankoma in Akan culture is the goddess Asase, who is the earth mother divinity. There are two earth mother divinities, Asase Apua and Asase Ya. In ancient Kemet, that's Asase Nebit Hetepet and Asase Nebit Het. We show both of those goddesses sitting next to Atem. When you see Atem, and then you see Atem Kepra or Atem Kopa or Atem Mukopa, and then you see Asase Nebit Hetepet and Asase Nebit Pet, what you're looking at is Odomankoma in Akan and Asase Afua and Asase Ya. So it's the exact same divinities with the same functions in nature and so forth. And in the article, we go into detail about that. Now, we know it's Asase Afua because Afua in Akan culture is the name, the soul name of somebody born on a Friday. The planet Venus governs Friday. We call it Afi or Afua. So a female born on that day is called Afua. That's her Kradin or her soul name. Afi or Afua for the planet Venus is a title of Het Heru in Kemet. She's called Faith in ancient Kemet. This is where Afi or Afia, or also Afua, comes from in Akan, governing the same planet. In Kemet, Het Her is a major title of divinity. In Akan, that same deity, that same name is Checher. So we call her Checher in Kemet. She governs the planet Afi or Venus. We also call her Afi in Akan. In ancient Kemet, she's called Heter or Heteru, and she's also called Faith. So Heter and Faith in ancient Kemet, dealing with the planet Venus and sensuality and reproduction and fertility, is called Checher and Afi in Akan. Just like you have Asase Afua or Asase Afia, that's saying Asase Afi, Asase Heteru, or Asase Cheche. This is exactly the same deity as Asaset Nebethetepet, also called Asaset Heteru Nebethetepet. This is Asase Afua, the earth, fertile earth mother divinity. So we have the same deities by the same name, dealing with fertility and birth and so forth. Atem, when he unites with his Kepha, he's uniting with the goddess Kepha, the hand of Atem, meaning Asaset Nebethetepet, who is the vulva, the hand of the god, his right hand. She is the great mother. She, when Atem and Asaset Nebethetepet unite, they are the mother and father who give birth to Shu and Tefnut. And then Shu and Tefnut give birth to Geb and Nut, and Geb and Nut give birth to Asar, Aset, Set, and Nebihet. Okay, so I just wanted to make sure. So if there are any questions regarding that, if you're on the phone line, you can raise your hand with the number one, just pressing the number one. And in the chat room, of course, you can make comments in the chat room. You have to log in in the chat room with your username in order to make comments. Right, and somebody said sometimes people use right hand to describe their partner or spouse. Correct. And that's not something new. That goes all the way back to ancient Kemet when the goddess herself was literally called the hand of the god. This is the clenched hand as they translated. Clenched hand is very interesting. They translated this clenched hand, Kepha. But then also when you look in the hieroglyphic dictionary, Kepha is the name of the female divinity. So the whites and their offspring know this. They know that Asaset Nebethetepet is the hand of the god. That's just a title for her. They know that when it talks about Atem uniting with the hand, it's talking about that goddess who's called the hand, his right hand or the hand. But then they would like to promote the insanity of sexual deviance. We can even show in the pyramid text, for example, where they're talking about one of the pyramid texts of Hepi. He's talking about his birth. He's showing that he's a child of Atem. So just like Atem and Usaset Nebethetepet give birth to Shu and Tefnut, then the Perah, or the king, the Ansu, the pharaoh, when he's, they're writing about him in the Meru text, they always associate themselves as the son of the gods. So he's like Shu, and he's born, and Atem becomes his father. And sometimes Atem will take the form of the beetle when he's Atem Kepra. So in that text it says Pepi, the king, is the beetle's son, talking about the son of Atem Kepra. Born from the vulva under the tresses, meaning the hair of she increases as she comes, the northern town that came from Geb's bra. And then there's more text. Now, Pepi is the beetle's son, meaning Atem Kepra. Kepra very often takes the form of the beetle, so Atemu Kepra or Atemu Kopa becomes Adamon Koma in Akan. But when they say Pepi, when they translate the beetle's son, they're talking about Atem Kepra. Pepi is Atem Kepra's son. That means he is Shu. He's being identified with Shu. Atem's son is Shu. His daughter is Tefnut. Shu means, has to do with air, but Shu also means fire. Tefnut comes from Tef, which means to spit or to expectorate. Moisture, so Tefnut is goddess of moisture. So you have fire and water, Shu and Tefnut. Shu in Akan means fire. And Ntafi means to spit or to release moisture in Akan as well. So you have Shu and Ntafi in Akan, Shu and Tefi, a Tefnit in Kemet, meaning the exact same thing. So it says Pepi is the beetle of Atem Kepra's son, meaning he's identifying himself with Shu. Born from the vulva and under the tresses or hair of she increases as she comes. That is a direct translation in English of usaset or asaset. She increases as she comes. The term to increase or expand is usa, and therefore usa or asaset means she increases as she comes forward. That's how her name is defined. So right here in the pyramid text, it's talking about Shu, the son of Atem, being born from the vulva. That's the symbol again of Nebedetepet, the vulva. And under the tresses, the hair of she increases as she comes to Usaset. The hair, of course, is the hair around the vulva. He's born from the vulva under the tresses of she increases as she comes. That's what they're talking about. So right there in the pyramid text, the oldest religious text, you know, composed text, religious compositions so far unearthed in the world, they're talking about Pepi being born as the son of Atem. He is Shu, and he's born from Usaset. Clearly it says that, clearly from the vulva of this goddess. But then they turn around and try to say he was born through masturbation. But it's right there in the text. It proves what we're talking about. Again, when they also talk about spitting, and they'll try to say, well, he swallowed his own semen and so forth, it doesn't say that at all. When it talks about the spitting out of Shu and Tefnut. Now, there are two things going on here. The term Shu means fire. It also means to release, like to spit out. Tefnut means water or moisture, but it also means to spit out. So when we have the saying in our culture, when we see somebody who has a child that looks just like them, we say, it looks like you just spit them out. That comes directly from our ancestral culture. When they talk about Shu and Tefnut were spit out by Atem, that comes directly from that. So many of the things that we say, whether it's my wife is my right hand, or, child, you look like you spit them out, these are things that Afurakani Afurakaini people in America have been saying. Because when we say these things in English, it reminds us of a certain kind of condition, or we have a memory of that idea. We have to use English words to reflect the idea now, because we've lost on the surface our language. But the idea goes back to something that we've been expressing for thousands of years. So when we talk about spitting, just like in this text, it says, Pepi is born from the vulva, under the tresses or hair of the goddess, Usaset. We have a text in the Kokobo text when we're talking about Ptah Hetep, and we're talking about the proper translation of the prepubescent sexual taboo. And we quote from the Kagatla people in Afurak Afrakai when they're telling the stories and the myths of the children about how women become pregnant and how they come into being, where do babies come from. And the Kagatla tell the myth of the woman becoming pregnant by a bearded snake. And the children grow up, you know, until they, of course, reach puberty saying, oh, well, there's a sacred bearded snake, and the bearded snake gets the women pregnant, and that's where babies come from. Of course, the bearded snake, just like here in the text when it talks about being born under from the vulva under the tresses, meaning the hair of she increases as she comes, being born under the vulva, and I mean born from the vulva in the hair, under the hair of this goddess, the bearded snake, of course, is the male organ with the pubic hair around the organ, and the organ is the snake. And just like in ancient Kemet, you have the cobra that is the spitting cobra, that when the cobra rises up, it's ready to spit. They associate that with the rising of the male organ and the spitting of the male organ. When a male is impregnating a female, the seminal fluid doesn't flow out like a stream of water when somebody's going to the bathroom. There's a spitting type motion or experience, and so the Afurakani Afurakaini people associated that with the rising of the cobra. When the cobra spits, it spits poison, it can attack and so forth, but just like a spitting cobra, when it rises up, it's ready to act. It's the same thing with the male organ. So when they talk about Atem spit out Shu and spit out Tefnut, they're talking about the organs spitting out the seminal fluid into the vulva, into Asaset Nebetetepet. And literally, Atem did spit out Shu and literally did spit out Tefnut. That's a literal thing. And spit them out in the form of the seminal fluid that will later, which is a little snake, which is a little serpent that swims and connects with the great mother's ovum and then creates the physical vehicle that the spirit, the ancestral spirit of the child, can enter into. So that's a literal thing. Now, what we also talked about last week when we were talking about Amen and Amenet, the great Ganga Ur and Ganga Urit, the great goose and gander who cackle when they're about to mate, just like geese cackle when they're about to mate, and they release sound vibrations. They spit out sound vibrations, release those sound vibrations. On one hand, when they're about to mate, there's a communication. There's a release of sound vibrations. That's a quote-unquote spitting or release. And then physically, the spitting comes from when Atem releases the seminal fluid that carries the seed of Shu and Tefnut, who will later, you know, impregnate through the seminal fluid. I thought they'd never detect it. That's important because if you look in the text of the Book of Knowing, the manifestations of Ra and overthrowing Apep, there's a direct relationship to that. And if you look in part B, for example, it goes back over the same part in part A when it says he was alone, not raised up with there yet. He spit out Shu and Tefnut. Then he repeats it again. He says, I was alone, not yet born were they. Not had I spit out Shu, not had I admitted Tefnut. I brought into my own mouth my own name, that is to say, Hekau, meaning a word of power, and I came into being in the form of the things in which came to being. So he brought into his own mouth a word of words of power, Hekau, incantation. No different than when we talked about last week, we talked about Amen and Amenet and previous weeks as well. Ganga Ur, Ganga Uri, they began to cackle, release the sound vibrations, the vibratory energy that caused the black substance of space to begin to vibrate and connect and start the creative process. In the same fashion here, Atem says he brought into his mouth his own name and released Hekau, meaning words of power or incantation. He spit those out or released those vibrations. This is during the mating process, just like this geese and the gander, goose and the gander, male and female, they release incantation. We're talking about creation through the process of the word, the release of word, you know, sound vibrations, divine incantations, ritual prayer, ritual chanting. Once that process came forward and caused the energy begin to move, then physiologically, then there's a release or a spitting of the seminal fluid into the sacred womb area through the vulva of Asaset Nebet Tepet, and then there's a conception that takes place of Shu and Tafnut. This is a connection to ancestral religion. Just like we engage in ritual prayer at the shrine, ritual song at the shrine, ritual dance at the shrine, people engage in ritual prayer prior to sexual activity, ritual song prior to sexual activity, ritual chant prior to sexual activity, sometimes just ritual communication prior to sexual activity. If people aren't involved in ancestral religion, they know nothing about that. So then they try to read into the text that when he's talking about releasing hekau or words of power or the seeds or that which poured out of his mouth, they don't realize these are hekau or words of power, ritual chanting, ritual sound vibrations, ritual seeds. That's what it's talking about. And it says that clearly in the text. Hekau is ritual words of power that proceed from the mouth. But, of course, the whites and their offspring leapfrog over that part of the text and try to make it a literal seed that was poured into the mouth. So, therefore, they're going to say that Atem swallowed his own seminal fluid, and once he swallowed it, then he spit it back out of his mouth, and then Shu and Tefnut were created. That insanity comes from the sexual deviance of the whites and their offspring. So no, Atem never swallowed his own seed. That's absurd. When we're talking about ritual incantations, those words of power are the seed energy that's released when people engage in ritual prayer and ritual chanting. We do that on a regular basis. And just on a very low level, once we've been stripped of our culture and don't know much about the culture anymore, ritual chanting is dropped. And then what happens is when a male and a female get together and a male whispers in the woman's ear and they say things to each other in a sexual fashion, then that stimulates the people and they become aroused and then they engage in the physical sex act and then the seed is released. But that's when we have lost the culture and all we can do is speak English to one another to, you know, try to stimulate some central idea or pass on some transfer some sensual energy. But ritually, there are ritual incantations that take place, and people engage in ritual processes. Some people engage in ritual processes sexually, specifically to invoke the Abosong, specifically. Or if they want to have a child, they'll engage in ritual prayer before they engage in the sexual act because they were having a problem trying to have a child. So what do? They engage in ritual prayer prior to the sexual act. They release the words of power, the hekau, exactly as it says in the text. They release the hekau, words of power, or ritual chanting to get the energy moving to connect with the forces in creation, to stimulate that fertility within themselves so that whether it's the male or female having a fertility problem or both, stimulate their sex organs because the sexual organs are the shrines for Afi, the shrines for Amen, Amen, men, and so forth, and they get that whole process going. So this is something that's part of our ritual culture. Again, it's dumbed down once we release the culture and people just say, quote-unquote, central things to one another. That's spitting. That's even in our culture today, just on a dumbed-down level, but we still have the same idea. When a black male is trying to communicate with a female and trying to stimulate her and arouse her, yes, some crackers will say, well, they're whispering sweet nothings in the person's ear. In our culture, they'll say they're spitting game at somebody. They're spitting at the person. They're trying to spit something at them. It's not because they're spitting on them literally. It's not because the male is swallowing his seminal fluid and spitting it out. That's it's not that kind of nonsense, obviously. They're trying to release sound vibrations that will, which is simply energy, that will stimulate certain ideas within the female, which will trigger an arousal-type response and get them prepared to want to engage in sexual activity. So this is where the spitting comes from. Goes from today, even though it's dumbed down, going back thousands of years, you find it right in the text, except they properly identify it as hekau, words of power, ritual chanting, ritual prayer, and so forth. So let us see. Okay, just want to make sure if anybody had any questions on that, raise your hand or put something in chat. And I want to make sure that, hold on one second. Okay, because we just wanted to make sure there was no problem with the phone line, because the last week we had a couple of problems 2 days in a row where people couldn't hear in the chat room. So I just want to make sure that's cool. Now let us look at this. Just one other piece dealing with that. We can look in the exact same text of the Book of Knowing, the Manifestations of Ra. And we just want to show something in this particular rendering of it. But then you can also find this specific divinity in the Shat Nduat, the book of what is in the quote-unquote underworld or the spirit world or the ancestral realm, in the 11th division or the 11th hour of the night. But first we want to look at this particular rendition. You'll find in a rendition by Budge. So when it talks about the history of the creation of the world, from the same text we were just reading from the version A, the first portion, when it says, the book of knowing the evolutions of manifestations of Ra and of overthrowing our Apep, the words of Neb-Er-Jer. And by the way, when we said Neb-Er-Jer, some people say, well, Neb-Er-Jer is the Lord of the Limit. That's a title of Atem. That's really a title of Atem. It's not a title of Asar, by the way. It's not a title of the supreme being. It's not a title of the monotheistic supreme being. That's totally inaccurate. There are many groups and individuals teaching that Neb-Er-Jer represents the unity of the divine male and female and is the one great Neter of all the Neteru. Totally inaccurate, because Neb-Er-Jer is a title of Atem. It's not a title of Amen per se. It's a title of Atem primarily. But there's also the title Nebet Er Jerit, which is a female divinity. That's the title associated with Heteru. So the people who have been teaching for years that Neb Er Jer represents the union of the male and female and is the monotheistic title of the one God, they didn't know that the title Neb Er Jerit or Nebet Er Jerit existed, and it is a title of Heteru, another divinity. So again, there's no monotheism. That foolishness is not real. So it says, the Book of Knowing, the Evolutions of Ra and Overthrowing Apep, the words of Neb-Er-Jer, a title of Atem, which he spoke after he had come into being. It says he came into being in the form of Kepra. He goes through those different things, not existed earth yet or heaven, not been created, the things of the earth, because Shu and Tefnut had not yet given birth to Geb and Nut. He says, I raised them from out of Nu, from a state of inactivity. Then it says, I had not found a place where I could stand. I worked a spiritual force within my heart. I laid a foundation from Ma'al, and I made every attribute. What's important in this particular rendition is when it says he laid a foundation in Ma'al. This is talking about the deity Ma'al, not Ma'at. The male deity, Ma'ah. The transliteration in Budge's representation is the deity Ma'ah, the symbol of the Ma'ah feather, the feather of Shu, but also Ma'ah, and the determinative of a male deity seated. So this is the male deity Ma'ah, the counterpart of the female divinity Ma'at. Now that's just one place where you can find Ma'ah. Another place you can find Ma'ah is in the 11th hour of the Shat Nduat, the book of what is in the so-called underworld or the spirit world. And you'll find him there amongst other divinities, just like you'll find Ma'at in different hours of the so-called underworld in connection with other divinities, depending on what role she's playing at that particular time. You have Ma'at in the 11th hour. You can download various versions of the text, and you can actually see the image of this male divinity, and you will see his name there. Many of our people talk about Ma'at on a consistent basis, but when it comes to Ma'at, they don't even know that he exists. So while on one hand they reject, on one hand they'll talk about Amen and Amen-Ra, but they've never even heard of Amenet or Amenet-Raet until we started publishing that information a number of years ago, about 12 years ago, and really started promoting that. Even prior to that, in 97, when we published the Uben Shang, the Ancestral Summons, we were establishing and showing the balance of male and female. And then, of course, with the release of the Kukutuntun, the Ancestral Jurisdiction, in 13,002, so-called 2002, we began talking about Amen and Amenet, Ka and Kaet, Ra and Raet, Ma'at and Ma'at, and these various divinities that many of our people have totally just overlooked because the whites and their offspring never mention them. And because we're not engaged in authentic ancestral religion, we're not listening to the Abothon, we're not listening to the Orishi, we're not listening to the Nsamanfo, we're not listening to the Egungun. So when they direct us to connect with the male and female divinities, we're not listening because the whites and their offspring said, no, this is it. So people will be practicing, quote-unquote, Kemetic spirituality for 30 years or 40 years and teaching people that Ma'at is the divinity but never mention the deity Ma'at one time, don't even know he exists. And he's just as important as Ma'at is. They'll mention Amen and Amen-Ra, never mention Amenet-Raet. Some individuals now, because we've published this information and it's been out for over a decade, some have incorporated that information to a certain extent into what they're talking about. Many have incorporated it and made it appear that they've been utilizing it all along. They jumped in front of the parade because they've been shown, for after having for decades not teaching things correctly, yet at the same time calling themselves priests and priestesses and having a following and so forth. Then people began to question, well, wait a minute, I just found out from the Kukutuntun and other work from ojidafo.com that there's actually a deity called Ra'et, who's just as important as Ra. And there's a deity called Amenet, who's just as important as Amen. There's a deity called Ma'at, who's just as important as Ma'at. And if we don't engage them and invoke them equally, we're just as imbalanced as we were before we even got involved in the culture. Then they try to jump in front of that and start incorporating some of the names of these divinities, pay lip service to them, and pretend as though they've been engaged in this process all along just to save face. Of course, when you're looking at different so-called groups and doctrines and so forth, the number one thing you want to do is investigate and connect with your own direct blood ancestresses and ancestors, the direct Nsamanfo connected to you, the Abosom that you were born into the world with. And you'll learn about that through first establishing a shrine to your Nananoma Nsamanfo and beginning to communicate with them directly. And you'll get the information as it comes. So that's the first thing you would do. If you are interested in looking at what other individuals are doing or what other groups are doing, of course you will want to see what their background is, not what they're teaching today. What were they teaching? What were they teaching when they first came out? Because a lot of them have immortalized themselves on the Internet. And, of course, you can look in, you know, archive.org and go back to when websites first came out. What were they teaching last year, the year before, ever since they first came out? Were they really teaching the same things they're teaching now? Did they switch up? Did they pretend like they've been teaching this information all along when in reality they haven't? You want to investigate what people have been doing, what they've been teaching, what's been going on. Because if they've been misinforming people for 10 years or 15 years or 20 years, and now all of a sudden they change some of that doctrine and new people don't know what's going on, what else have they been misinforming people about which they haven't discovered yet? and they may discover 5 years from now and they pretend as though they've been teaching it all along? What other things are they misleading people about? So anytime you investigate any kind of group or individual or information, doctrine, whatever, you want to investigate, you want to do a sankofa, return and go and grasp from the past what has been going on from the beginning to see what's really happening, what people are really doing. All right. So if there are any questions, let us know. For those who came in late, we just wanted to share with you that on August 9th, we will be in Philadelphia presenting at the Philadelphia Sankofa Festival, an all-day festival. It's free, 12 o'clock to 6 p.m. We are honored to have been invited to speak at the festival, to keynote that festival at some point during the festival, probably in the midst of the festival. So we'll be there. They'll have vendors, food vendors, clothing, and a number of different things, black businesses, of course, cultural presentations, expressions, various different things from the community. So that's the Philadelphia Sankofa Festival, August 9th, 12 p.m. to 6 p.m. And we will be there. And then, of course, we will be, we're in the midst of our fundraisers still. We are going to be in Las Vegas on August 16th. We're still raising money for that event, including for the free book giveaway. Whenever we do a presentation in different cities, we give away a free copy of one of our soft cover books to every individual that attends an event. We do not charge an attendance fee for any of our presentations. So we're doing a fundraiser to raise funds to cover the various expenses, because we also do not charge a speaker's fee to organizers of our events. So when you have us come out to your city, we do not charge a speaker's fee or per diem, and we do not allow people to charge admissions fees for people to come into the venue. So the way we raise funds is through the sale of our publications. We just released 3 new soft cover publications a little bit over a week ago. So now we have 10 books in soft cover. We have the Kukutunsun, the Ancestral Jurisdiction that we spoke about today, that we mentioned today. We have the Ubin Shang, the Ancestral Summons. We have Oberima, Afurakani Manhood. We have Afuraka, Afurakai, the origin of the term Africa. We have Mara Nechi, Divine Law and Divine Hate. We have the Nkwamua, Whole Life Journal. We also, the 3 new books that we released, Enidaho, which means awareness, where we go into detail about the origin of the term God etymologically. We also go into the various articles we've published dealing with Nganga Ur, which is the title of Amen, showing that it is not the term nigger or nigga. We talk about the origin of the term negus in Ethiopia, showing that it is not the term niggas or nigga. We go into detail about the origin of the term naga in India, which actually comes from a title of Ra in ancient Kemet. It is not the term nigger. So we show identity. We go into the awareness of our identity, showing that the term nigger, nigga, nigga, niggas, all of that, none of it has to do with anything divine. We show the actual etymology of these terms. It doesn't have anything to do with nature. It doesn't have anything to do with any of that. It's a derogatory term that you can actually find the roots of it in ancient Kemet. It's not rooted in Indo-European languages. It's actually rooted in the language of Kemet, and it means foes or enemies who are crushed to death. So it's always been a derogatory term, and it's foolish for black people to continue to fight for the right to call themselves niggers and try to craft insane etymologies to make nigger mean God. That's just a representation of our pathology that we've inherited from the whites and their offspring that was forced upon us and we've inherited. So we go into detail about that and give the proper etymologies, not only for these terms, but to show who we really are as our identity, what is our identity, and who these divinities really are that are associated with us. The next book that we published recently, a week and a half ago, soft cover version, Koko Ba, which means warning in Chui, but the various articles compiled in one volume dealing with this sexuality, homosexuality never existing in ancient Kemet. So we address the Khnum, Neon Khnum and Khnum Hetep, the identical twins that the whites in Arab Spring always try to say are dissexuals or homosexuals. We smash that argument and prove that in detail that they are identical twins. The story about Set and Anat, the dating of the contendings of Heru and Set, we go into detail about that to prove that that text is not about dissexuality and how the whites and their offspring infected the text as well. We prove that the instructions of Ptah Hetep, the instruction 35 dealing with the prepubescent sexual taboo, we give the proper translation of that and the cosmology behind it, and then we also show it has nothing to do with dissexuality, which the whites and their offspring attempt to force into that particular text. And then we also have, what is the other text on that one? Let me see. It's the Ptah Hetep text. The, let me see. I just want to check, make sure the last one in that, it was divine prohibition against dissexuality, homosexuality, and ancient Kemet. We show in the Runu Pert Emeru, which is the Book of Coming Forth by Day, which is misnomer, the Egyptian Book of the Dead, the actual admonition against dissexuality, showing that it's divinely hated by the Supreme Being and the Divinity. And that's actually number 11 out of the 42 enunciations of Ma'at, which you'll find in Papyrus of Pu-Nefer and Papyrus of Ani and so forth. You can easily download that. Papyrus of Ani, number 11, you will find it is a divine prohibition against dissexuality, homosexuality. So that's all of those articles are all combined in one volume. So that's the second book that we just recently published. And then the third book, More Means Dead. So we actually have that now in soft cover. Previously it was just an ebook. Now we have it in soft cover as well with a brand new appendix with additional information from the tree language of the Akan that supports even further everything that's in the book. So we go into detail showing that the term more, is a term that comes directly from ancient Kemet. It was not created by the whites and offspring, but it literally means dead, the socially dead, meaning the slaves, bondsmen, vassals, serfs, wretched, afflicted, and so forth. And then the spiritually dead, the ones who are actually damned, people who are living in the world, they're called mer, meaning dead, meaning slave, meaning wretched, and so forth. And those who are deceased, it literally means the dead, but not just any kind of dead, but specifically the damned. So when you call yourself a mor, you're calling yourself dead. That's what the term means. And we go into detail about that, and we show how the whites and their offspring use that term as a pejorative against all black people. So those people who are referring to themselves as Moors are engaged in a brainwashed process where they're constantly referring to themselves as dead, physically dead, spiritually dead, and so forth. So those are the three that we just recently released. And then we also, of course, have the other seven publications, soft cover publications. And so let me give the address, the web address to that. So it's for those who are on the phone, odwira.com, O-D-W-I-R-A-F as in free, O.com / N-H-O-M-A, which is Nhoma, N-H-O-M-A. .html, so you can order the books from there. That will support us in our work to get this information out to our people. It will also support us in doing the presentation, not only distributing the work, and again, for those who came in late, we also have a program whereby if you want to order the books wholesale and then sell them retail so you can generate money for yourself as an entrepreneur, but you can also, at the same time, you're getting accurate information out to our people. That's right there on the website as well. You can contact us about that. So we're getting the information out. We're also assisting people to generate revenue for themselves. And it also helps us to cover our expenses for these trips to different cities. If you want us to come to your city, for example, where, you know, we raise money through the sale of our publication so that we can cover these expenses. If you would like us to come to your region, just hit us up on our email address. Go to the website, ojidafo.com. Go to the Contact Us section, and you can connect with us that way. Okay, so if there are no questions, we can just end it here. We will be back on tomorrow at Gua Marketplace. We'll be announcing who's going to be on the show tomorrow, 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can connect with us also on Facebook at Akanfo Nanason. We have a Facebook group, Akanfo Nanason. Then we also have our social network, afuraka-afurakayet.ning.com. That's a Ning site. It's on the Ning platform. It's a private social network you can join. You can create a profile. You can engage in discussions, connect with other people in your area and around the world who are studying the same information. Our people, Afurakani, Afurakaini people only, of course. You can establish groups, study groups for people in your region or just connected online and so forth. There are hundreds of discussions covering, with thousands of posts covering various aspects of ancestral religion and culture and shrines and everything else, nation building and everything. So you can jump on that as well. And that's about it. So if you have anybody has any questions, just send us an email. You can also give us a call at 202-717-0050. And may I say, everybody, for tuning in, and we will see you all. Tune in tomorrow at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Egua Marketplace. We always like to highlight a black business or service in the community that's, you know, providing products and services to Afurakani, Afurakaini people who also share our ancestral values at the same time and also promoting those values as well through the business. So we will be back on with Egua tomorrow at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Okay, heads up. Yerase.